bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey, it's me. What's up?
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
No. Hello.
I'll be not muted. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a silent protest. And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody. That's me.
Hey, gentlemen. We've got an email. This came in before. Terry writes, I've started making episodes for a tabletop RPG informational versus live play podcast, and the episodes done before I joined were a little rough around the edges. Is there a point where you think it makes sense to either re-edit or remove entries to your back catalog that are of lower quality, or do you think that's not a good use of time versus spending more time improving current episodes? Thanks, Terry.
It's interesting because it's not, he says it's not a live play podcast, so it's not serialized, so it's not like people will necessarily go to the very first episode.
Yeah. I tend to be a move ahead kind of a philosophy guy. I think that there's always going to be things that bother us about our past. But ultimately, I think the only line I would say there is it depends on the project. If your project is supposed to be these standalone things, then I would be more on the side of like, all right, yeah, go back and clean up some old stuff. But otherwise, like, you really have to justify it in my mind, because you can always look. The beautiful future is you can create what you want and take all those lessons and make everything that you have that much better going forward.
Mm-hmm. This is also why I strongly advise people who are getting ready to start a thing. I tell people, although I didn't take this advice myself, but I tell people make 10 podcasts because and then release the 10th one, because that'll be the first time that you have really an idea of what it is you want to do. And tell yourself the lie that eventually you'll use one of the previous 9 as a banked episode. Spoiler alert, you're never going to do that because you're going to realize that they're all garbage. Everything always starts off garbage. If nothing else, take a look at the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation. And so now, having said that,
Brian?
Do you have to go? Okay, tell me I'm wrong. You. Compare season 2 okay. and season
Star
1.
Starfleet is a masterpiece.
as far as being revisionist, only if you have a liability in the back catalog. I would say there's maybe 3 things that I've scrubbed from the back catalog of all of Scam School. One was like an IP thing. One was a word that seemed innocuous at the time, but later has increasingly come to be a slur, and I was like, well, I'm just not comfortable with that. But like outside of that, I don't see. I'm with Justin. Like always be forward focused on that kind of thing.
I would say Terry mentions that it's an informational podcast, which also doesn't make it sound like it's news or timely stuff. In which case, I would say either. So if it's like, hey, here's this is a month where we're trying to show you how to DM, say, this game system, right? Like, either go and redo that information, right? Go and re-record those if you're concerned about the quality of them. Or I think if you want to keep them there, keep them where they are in the feed, then I think that would be worthy. Because if depending on how you're treating these, if you're treating this whole series of episodes as like, this is evergreen content, we want people to be able to go to the back catalog, maybe consider it, but also consider just redoing it, right? Like, I think... like with Scam Nation, tell me if this is out of line, Brian, with like some of what we're doing with Scam Nation is covering a little bit of stuff that's older Scam School content, because back then it was longer, it was sloppier, it was low fidelity.
Yep.
And so we're kind of refreshing, we are opening ourselves up to refreshing older content, especially because it's older and it's not as good. So
yeah,
consider doing that.
So here, let's say, for example, each of your episodes is going to focus on a different aspect of DMing, like character building. Which are the best dice? Are dice actually haunted? So you do all those things. And then, so let's say one of your first 5 episodes are kind of garbage. You're embarrassed of them. They're not where you want to be. It's still your best attempt at talking about, are these dice haunted? So until you come up with a better attempt, you really have no reason to scrub that out there. But also, I don't want to see somebody 5 steps into a marathon stop and say, no, that third step was messed up. Let me go back. Like yeah. It should be so far in the rearview mirror that it's like, oh, you know what? It's finally been forever long. We could finally go back and do that one episode right. And that is, I think you're exactly right, Bryce. That is a big part of the playbook of what we're doing now with Scam Nation. It's a delight to be able to do, because it's not only just the resolution and having a more current cast of characters and better storytelling, but also we've added new fundamental elements like the recap segments at the end, which now we're able to carve out and make those part of the Twitter videos that we're doing. So you will have infinite excuses to go back. This is the great secret of the internet. You get unlimited retries on everything. If you do poorly, one of two things happens. Either nobody cares, nobody watches, nobody listens, in which case it's as though you didn't do it, or you mess up so spectacularly that in a weird way, then your new job is to just figure out how that becomes part of the story with the new attention that you've garnered to roll it into moving things forward.
Yeah.
I have an issue where I have one of my self-published books, one of the ones I did years ago. I didn't give it as much attention as I should have with the proofreading, which was fine when very few people were reading them. But as more people have been reading my books and they go look at the back catalog, I've had twice in 1 week, I think, I got an email like, hey, there are a lot of grammatical mistakes in here. And I'm at the point now where I'm like, I think I need to hire a proofreader because there's enough tension on that long tail now where it kind of affects everything else. There's a point where I was like, it was pointless. I'd better off just moving forward and writing a new book. But now I go like, well, because that back catalog now is doing really well, probably worthwhile to go back there and say, now's the time to go back.
Along
and
that same
it.
Topic, I think we've talked about this before, but 15, 20 years ago when I was first starting a tour, I knew I needed a pitch book. So, you know, in 5 days, I put together a 32-page leaflet, basically. But, like, the drawings on it were so terrible and lo-fi. This is before I had a sketch pad or the ability to scan anything, pre-cell phones or whatever. Like, some of the illustrations were literally done just with a mouse. And it's like, good enough. They'll give me $5 and I'll sign it after a show. And those become increasingly embarrassing as your quality of work improves. And
part of production is working non-destructively, right? I was doing Trending Lemon for a while, which is still on hiatus, but every episode is its own project. All of the things are tracked out very specifically. If I wanted to go in and change stuff later, I know when I started, I'm making music for the show, so I wanted to be able if I end up making more music down the line, then I can go in and change that later very easily. So as long as what you're doing going forward is also easy to edit, right? As long as you're continuing to give yourself the opportunity to make changes or build off of what you've started, that's also a valuable thing to keep in mind as you're going and making more episodes.
Let's pose the hypothetical. This is often a way to figure out if something is a good idea or not, or at least something that I would do. Let's say you're 50 episodes in and you're like, wow, man, there's a lot of garbage in that first 10 to 20 episodes. So you can imagine two extremes. Let's say you give yourself unlimited license to go back and fix every mistake of your first 50 episodes. Or you say you can never affect any of that, but you can quadruple your output going forward. Either way, 5 years is going to pass. Which of these two futures do you want to live in? The one where 5 years from now, you finally fixed every problem with those first 50 episodes, but your entire back catalog is 50 episodes long? Or the future where you're already celebrating episode 1,000?
And it depends on how much work it goes into, right? If these things take you a long time to script out, and then maybe it's different. You know, with the podcasts we do, they're live to tape, so it's very easy for us to just go and keep making them rather than, you know, we'll see where that balance is.
I guess, you know, there you have it. I think it depends upon which point where you are at what you want to do. You know, early on, it's like Brian said, the idea of the marathon where you step, the perfectionist marathon where you keep stepping backwards to go redo your steps, you know, that's sounds like a Monty Python sketch, but that's a good point. Is you don't want to stop your forward progress because you're trying to perfect the thing right now. And often we don't know how. Like, we're like, you know, a lot of what I felt like I did early on was not good, but it was better than nothing. And just move forward and then get to the point where you need to.
The hardest part about creating something, and specifically learning or building into territory that you have not tread before, is the anxiety of, am I doing this right? Am I going in the right direction? Like, I can put in all the time and effort, but a lot of times it just takes experience. It takes, you know, a lot of reps to figure out, like, exactly what, like, before you know exactly what you're trying to build, you've got to try to build a lot of different things. And I think it can be a comfort, and you can make yourself think that you are a perfectionist and you are still putting in the work by saying, oh, I got to go, now that I've learned these lessons, I got to go fix these old things that were out, because I wouldn't have done them like that now. When I think that that could be a misplaced or at least not as constructive use of your time, when you should be really kind of confronting the anxiety of creation and just figuring out, like, no, look, I got to be scared. Like, I got to be building things. It takes more bravery to take a step that you know might be wrong than it is for you to perfect the way that you should have been walking in the past. And ultimately, like, that's where you got to focus.
That is one of the real benefits to doing any kind of live performance. I would say the perfect version of that is table hopping magic in the variety entertainment world, because it's expected that you will hit 7 to 23 tables in 3 hours of doing your job. During that time, you're going to do a 6-minute set, and every single one, you're going to get a slightly different audience, and you get to iterate the same 3 tricks. Slightly less fidelity is doing, if you're later touring college to college, it was the same hour and a half long show, but it's like each time it's like, okay, I'm going to let, this is the one joke that I'm dialed in on that we're going to tweak. And then it gets harder when it comes to being on camera and doing weekly productions, because you only get one at bat per week. But I would say that in general, because of the nature of live performance, you don't have the option of going back and fixing anything. And I think that feels like a downside in the moment when you're having to deal with it. But now I genuinely feel like it's a real gift, because you develop that sense of there's no going back and there's no decision of whether or not you should go back that's ever on the table. And as a result, like, you can see it in even the speech cadence that I'm exhibiting right now. It is a different subroutine from the speech cadence that I allow myself to do on Modern Rogue or Scam Nation shoots, because I know that there is an option on the table to back up, but I know now that there isn't. And so if you could develop both skills, great, but whatever you do, in general, don't worry about what's in the rearview mirror. Nobody cares.
Any picks?
I do have a pick. I got a retro pick. My daughter is finally, she has graduated from, and I didn't think about this. A lot of people question the value of Twitch. They don't really understand, like, why does anybody want to watch somebody else play a video game? Because if you are the one playing your video game, then you are the director of your experience, and you are responsible if things go slowly and it gets boring and you have a bad time. Whereas, and for my 15-year-old Penny, she really enjoyed watching other people play through the Kingdom Hearts series. And so finally she has started, because she's familiar and she feels safe and, like, no matter what, I'm not going to be a sucker playing these games because I know enough to get forward. And she has dived in, is playing the whole back catalog one at a time. But there came a moment when she was waiting for one of them to download, and there was just enough time that, and it, as a dad, you don't get to sit your kid down very often and say, you must watch this and experience this or whatever. But there are these brief windows where there's a little bit of a nudge you could do. And over the weekend, I got to have one of those nudge experiences where I'm like, oh, it's going to take a while to download, huh? He's like, why don't you play Journey on the PS4? And she's like, what is it? And I'm like, don't worry about it. Just start. And so Journey, if you're unfamiliar, this goes back, Justin might remember it from the Game On days back at Twit. It's a short game with no spoken words, but beautiful, iconic imagery that all takes place in the desert. And you have an unnamed protagonist, and a implied objective of keep heading west, and you pick up companions along the way, and it is remarkable storytelling that I hope I was kind in my review back in the day, because I know history has been kind to it, and it holds up. Here we are 7 years later, and it was a delightful 2 to 3 hour experience. And if you have a game console that has it available to you, just dive in. It's delightful.
And now it's on iOS. Now it's on PC in the Epic Game Store.
Oh, that's great.
There is a PS4 version. It was on PS3. So there's a lot of options to playing it. It really is a fun experience, especially if you're playing it online and you have you get to have this experience of another stranger is also in your game, and you don't really need to work together, but you're not
passing in the night.
Yeah, it's a very cool experience, and it looks really nice if you're able to play it on something that has a lot of graphical power.
And they create a couple of those visceral moments that there's one sequence in particular that I believe it's the only time they do that in the game, where you're so in it and it's not about a skill-based moment, but the camera backs away and just captures the moment from the side as the sun sets behind you. I don't know if Bryce knows which moment I'm talking about. It's one of those you're surfing down a thing moments or whatever. Mm. That it's just, it creates one of those indelible images that is just so precious. I really dug it.
Yeah.
You know, the side jag on the whole, the watching people play games, like, who's going to want to watch a bunch of actors record a thing on film? They already did it. You know, you wonder where this leads to, because you think about you're getting, you know, Variety and stuff will cover news about Ninja moves to this new platform or whatever. Sidebar, who the hell is Ninja? You know, but where these things are going, you're thinking about what's this landscape going to be like in 10 years? You know, am I going to go to a movie theater and watch like this epic session of somebody playing Fortnite or something with a couple other big personalities from this because it's like Jackass level entertaining or something? Or I'm just trying to wrap my head around, you know, where this could end up, because it's becoming, I never saw it coming, and it's amazing to see this becoming so popular.
I think we talked about this at some point, but I think once I realized it's just a virtualization of sitting on the couch with your friends and one of your friends has the controls. Once I understood that metaphor, that that is a universal experience. What if you could have that with your favoritest of friends and also thousands of them at a time, and your best playingest of one-way friends behind the controls? That's what Twitch is.
Yeah. Any other picks?
Yeah, my pick will be Politicon. First time that it took place in Nashville. Tennessee, a red state, previously had been in LA. It was a very unique and interesting experience that I've really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I was there this weekend. Yeah. So who knows where it's going to be next year, but if you like people talking about politics, well, folks, that's the place to go.
I got a pick. So I've been doing these Friday streams, playing through games on Twitch.tv.
Friday Night Bright.
Friday Night Bryce, which I still contended is an illegal marketing campaign, but
I'm just saying that's what everybody's calling it. You know, just
well, the lawyers will sort that out. Yeah. So on Friday we just finished. I actually think I picked this maybe last week or the week before. The Somnium Files, the game where you're a dream cop. I think the last time I talked about this, I was a little concerned because the main who writes this game and has written these other great games that I love normally has a tendency to do these big metaphysical elements to these games. And at the point that I was at, there were not really any. And I was concerned that it was just going to be like a really standard like murder mystery sort of story, but also like it must have been something really convoluted and complicated. And when we did that last stream on Friday, we got the metaphysical bullcrap that I love in there. The thing that happens, once they tell you what it is and what happened, it like all rushes in. You have that moment of like, all the pieces fitting in, and you start saying, oh my gosh, and then that means, and then what about this, and then this. It was a very cool moment, and I really did enjoy playing the game, despite the puzzles actually being really weird, because they're like logic, they're like dream logic, and so it's a lot of like abstract or just nonsensical stuff being the solutions. But overall, I really did enjoy it, and I came to really appreciate it in the end. It's I, the Somnium Files. I played it on the Switch. I would recommend playing it somewhere else, because it's just a little graphically intense for the Switch, and so there's a lot of load time stuff. Or you can watch the VODs, twitch.tv/nightattack, or youtube.com/neshcom is where I've got them posted. I played through all of it. So there you go.
Nice.
My pick is Good Omens. I finally watched it all the way through, and I thought it was delightful. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I know Justin and I came down on different ultimate sides of this one. I was really curious whether or not you would be on Team Good Omens or not.
Yeah. I it reached the end. I was sad. I enjoyed it. I thought it was delight. I mean, it's one of these things that took me a little bit to get into it first, because the pacing, the storytelling was a little bit there. But, you know, it reminded me of, there's been some wonderful Terry Pratchett miniseries on there. Hogfather, Going Postal, and Color of Magic, I thought is still one of my favorites. Well, you know, if you can find those are absolutely wonderful. And it felt like very much in the vein of those. You know, a little bit to get into it. Then once I got into it, I was sad when it was over.
So. Nice.
I loved all the Tennant and Michael Sheen scenes. You know, that was great. I thought that was awesome. And that's my review.
Yeah, I will admit, man, hoo boy, I want to say episode 4 or whatever, when they start to try to scare you with the kid, I'm like, ugh, all right.
Yeah, there are parts that just, for a 6-episode thing, feel long.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kid stuff, that was, the Antichrist storyline was the least, worked the least out of them. But, yes. Other than that, though, I still, you know, I'd fun, enjoyed it. It was a fun thing. So, you know, enjoyed it.
I know that they're whispering around maybe making a follow-up season of this. Would the three of you, would any of you be interested in Good Omens season 2?
Well, it's a more complicated thing, because if all the creators, all the writers, all the IP owners were on board, then, you know, would I want the... I already would have hesitations. I mean, I had hesitations about there even being a second season of Stranger Things. I'm like, it was so perfect. Are you just going to take something away? Spoiler alert, they took a little something away. And so already I'd be on the fence about a second season of Good Omens, but also knowing that it's, you know, kind of based off the notes of a co-creator that's no longer participating, that makes it more challenging for me.
I would be there more for it. I think some of the stuff that was, I haven't read the original book, but I think that part of the elements of the show that were in my favorite kind of seemed like adaptation stretching, right? So I'd be, I mean, look, I think they know the beating heart of the show. And if you want to tell another story that involves that beating heart, then yeah, I'm down for it.
You know, we're 3 episodes in right now, season 2 of Castle Rock, and I'm enjoying it. And I'm again, I don't know if you guys have watched Castle Rock.
No, but it does sound like, by all accounts, it's good, and it tickles that itch of what I love most of the Dark Tower series.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. I highly recommend it. And not saying that you're going to walk away with like a Stranger Things season 1, but yeah. Damn, for a self-contained, the idea of the self-contained season that it starts and it ends and you get your whole story and they're not holding anything else back. Really enjoyed it. Really, really, really enjoyed Castle Rock. And so, you know, I put that out there as like, that's a great, and now season 2, you know, the idea is, hey, this is a world where these things happen, but these are different characters, some of the same locations, but this is a different story, you know. A big fan. So, you know, as far as Good Omens, like, yeah, I mean, if you have a different story to tell, whatever, and sure, I enjoyed, it was delightful, you know. I thought it made me, you know, feel nostalgic for that kind of whimsical storytelling. So I went back and started watching Hitchhiker's Guide, you know, and then, you know, the BBC production of that. And I'm like, man, like, is there a connection between Neil Gaiman and Douglas Adams? And I find out, sure enough, Neil Gaiman wrote a book about that, about having, you know, talking to and being inspired by Douglas Adams early on. And I'm like, all makes sense now.
Yeah, I didn't know that book existed. I want to read that because you feel a lot of similarities in kind of their writing style and their style of humor.
Yeah, I'll pull up the title of that if we have a moment, which was, the book is called Douglas, Don't Panic, Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, by Neil Gaiman with contributors.
Oh, very cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, so just a bit about that. So anyhow, there you go. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.